Well, I would say a Merry Christmas, but that's not what we say. It is interesting with what's coming, and today's the 21st, so that's 4 days from now. If you think of the name Christmas or Xmas, but Christmas, I looked it up to see if I was going to be correct in thinking about what I'd heard a long time ago concerning Christmas. And when I looked up what is a Mass, it says a Christian service that is commemorating the death and resurrection of Jesus Christ. And I had heard a long time ago that a Mass was a death, but I'm sure that there are other definitions in the mind of people today. They do not think of commemorating the death. They are thinking of commemorating the birth of Jesus Christ. But what we have, and I gave a full sermon this morning because we didn't have a Bible study, and it was a regular sermonette, a little bit longer, but excellent sermonette that we heard this morning on how God intervenes in the affairs of getting America started. But whatever the case, today we are doing something very special on this special day. Today is a day that is special that you may not know. You may not even know what happened today. You may not know what happened at 4:21 a.m. this morning because there was something that was special. And I did not know until actually I read something this morning, because I never stop preparing a sermon until I actually get to the first sermon that I'm going to give. It's always, you know, your mind is working. But whatever the case, somewhere along the line this morning, I came across a special date. But when you think about Christmas, what do we think about? Now, we know it's pagan. So we could go into quite a few scriptures on the paganism, and we'll touch a little bit. I do have this book on the winter solstice. The winter solstice, and it's written by a man who's actually a man and his wife who's written 70 books on the subject of the winter solstice or other pagan holidays, but mostly on Christmas, the winter solstice. In fact, the man who wrote this book lets you know how to celebrate this day in many different ways, whether you have a play that you're, the Saturn and the Dragon, I think, is one that's listed in this book. And if you want to put a play on, you have about 7 or 8 pages of 8 or 10 characters who are talking, and you can see exactly what they're saying, and it is all about the winter solstice. So we do have, and I'll turn to a couple things in the book, because I don't think I have to convince most of you that Christmas is pagan. I do not have to convince most of you. I don't have to convince any of you that Jesus Christ was not born on December 25th. If there's any question that we have, I'm short-sighted, and I can't see somebody in the back row that might be brand new, because as I look around, all of you know that. And we've had Bible verses this past week where I think it was starting actually December the 8th, where you had part 1, part 2, and part 3 on how Jesus Christ was not born on December 25th. And one was, of course, concerning the father of John the Baptist, and when he served in the temple, and figuring when John the Baptist was born and knowing how far behind Jesus Christ was as far as Mary carrying Jesus Christ compared to her cousin. So you can figure it out in that way. And you can figure it out two other ways that we even discussed last week, one being the shepherds in the field, and one also that we didn't bring up last week, and that is they went to Bethlehem to register. And it would not have been in the wintertime at all. So all of us know that it wasn't December 25th. It was on my birthday, June 25th. No, it was not. It was not. It was more like the Feast of Trumpets, actually, which would be interesting if Christ actually was born on that day. But it would be somewhere more around the Feast of Trumpets. And that would be in late September or early October, somewhere in there. But anyway, in this book, it talks about the winter solstice, and you may not know what solstice means. How many of you actually know what soul, because soul is sun, so all you have to do is know what stis means. So solstice means what? The sun stands still. I didn't know that until I started, you know, looking at it again, even though I've had this book and I've given sermons on the subject of Christmas, but I didn't know sun stands still. About a week ago, I looked up when the sun was setting, and it was going to be setting at 4:36. And that was about a week ago. And then so I looked up, well, a week from now, certainly the sun is going to be setting even earlier, like maybe 7 minutes, eight, usually a minute a day approximately. So maybe 4:29. And so I looked it up, and guess what the time was 1 week later? It was 4:36, because there is a period of time where there is a solstice, meaning the sun stands still. Now, I'd never paid that much attention in the past. Maybe I didn't notice it, but because I'm giving this sermon on the winter solstice, at least part of it, it's mostly on idolatry. But anyway, when I looked that word up, it's like, well, that makes sense then. The sun is standing still. So back in the time, and we're looking at 3,000 years ago, we're looking at a period where the sun was going down, down, and all of a sudden, it stopped. And each day, it was not going backwards or forwards. It was just staying there. And so in the pagan cultures, you find that all over the world now, and you read about these places, whether it be in Egypt or in Europe, Ireland would be, I guess, part of Europe. But anyway, what you see is places like Newgrange in Ireland. My wife and I were, after the feast in Scotland, 2010, I believe it was, the feast in Scotland, we went to Ireland and then came back to the Southern Ireland and then across to Wales. Maybe that was on our second trip. But anyway, we went to Newgrange in England. And the name of that place is Brú na Bhuan. It's Irish. I'm not pronouncing it correctly, but I know it's a long U and a short E sound. So Brú na Bhuan, and that means, guess what? Well, what they were doing, and let me do this. Let me read you in this book on page 11, just at the start, The Solstice Dream. And this is written by Caitlin Matthews and her husband John Matthews. The entire book is written. They're the ones who wrote 70 books. But here it starts by saying, here at the gateway of the year, may we strive to make good cheer. In our revels shall joy abound and sorrow be cast underground. So there's reveling, of course. Sorrows cast underground. The sorrows meaning, hey, we don't know if this is the end of the world. We don't even know if the sun is coming back. So there, like in many places throughout the world at that time, we explain this place here. It's called, again, it's Newgrange, if we just want an Americanized word for it, an Anglicized word for it, and a British or Irish word. And I'll let you know what that word means in a moment after I read here. It is just before sunrise on a cold December day, 3,000 years ago before the coming of Christ. For those crouched at the heart of the mound, it must seem as though light has been banished forever. Then suddenly a tiny sliver of sunlight strikes the stone slab at the back of the chamber. Slowly it widens, climbs upward, illuminates a number of mysterious carvings, circles, spirals, and zigzag patterns. For the people crouched in the center of the mound of Brú na Bhuan, also known as Newgrange, every symbol has a meaning. But by far the greatest significance is the return of the sun itself. The light that enters the dark womb of the earth brings with it the promise of warmth and life to come. Literally, if you want to take a look at the what that inside chamber looks like, you can see it here. How many have been there? My wife has. when were you there? And a couple of us in the audience have been there. So if you're inside, and we were able to go inside and see what it looked like, and basically the way it's described, what you're pointing at is the sun where you see going down, but you're looking for, hopefully, a sliver of light that is going to come back, knowing then that the sun is going to come back for another year anyway. It all started with Adam and Eve, according to one of the traditions that I read here, and that is, after Adam was put out of the garden, the first year he was watching the sun go down, and it was getting a little bit darker. You know, the sunset was a little bit later, earlier every day, and he then fasted for 8 days, is what it says. This is Adam, the first year that he was kicked out of the garden, fasted 8 days, and at the end of the fast, the sun started coming back. And so from that time on, Adam kept, what would be Christmas? Adam kept a period of time where he is now worshiping the sun. Now, do I believe that? And the answer is no, I don't. But who knows what happened? Would Adam have been a little bit anxious when that sun was going down? I think it would depend on how long Adam and Eve were in the garden. But it could be also a curse where Adam thought, you know, God cursed us. We're out of the garden, so maybe we only get 1 year to live. Again, I don't believe that. That's, I think, made up. You know, what people do if they want to get my attention and your attention, they'll say things like that. So what does this word, bru-ne-buan, mean? It means meaning of the season. Now, think about that. Meaning of the season. What is the meaning, actually, of this season? The meaning of this season is we have a sun god, and we are going to be worshiping that sun god so that the sun will come back. That's the meaning of this season. I think it's really good because, what do you mean? What is the meaning of the season? Well, it's worship of the sun. It's idolatry is what it boils down to. So we see a couple things in the book, and I won't spend too much time, but I will tell you that today something happened at 4:21 a.m. and the sun started coming back. It's been a solstice, it has been a sun standing still up until this morning at 4:21 a.m. And it's interesting, around the world at this exact time, of course, this is Eastern Standard Time, but around the world it is stated that it's the same time everywhere that the sun starts coming back, everywhere. So it would be on, well, here, we're a little bit earlier, so it would be at 3:21 a.m. here, I guess. Well, wait a minute. We got Eastern Standard Time, not Mountain Standard Time, not Central Standard Time, better yet. But you know what I mean. There's a 3 hours difference, but it's going to be, 1:21 here, 2 at Central, 3 at Eastern, and change that all 1 hour, so you got it right. But anyway, exact same time, everybody looking, 4:21 Eastern Standard Time, they see the sun coming back. So how many of you made something where you have the sun coming in and you were worried about the sun coming back? Nobody? Not one person. Huh. What a shock. Okay, so it's very interesting then what happened in the back, and I call this the idolatry of the solstice, because that's what is happening in the whole book here is written on the solstice. The sun standing still, and the cries, the prayers that went up to that sun god so that the sun would come back, they would have their crops. Okay, you could have your celebrations. Did I mention Saturn and the dragon? I think I did. You can read, and I'll read just one thing more here from this book on page 234, because at the end of this play that you would put on, that you're not going to put on, Here is a quote from The Voice. And just think about Christmas. Think about the child, Jesus Christ. 234, and that's a little more this way. The back of the book, and I don't recommend buying this book, by the way, but at the back of the book, it tells you quite a few things that you can do, the type of food that you want to eat at this time of the year, what you can do to make hot cross buns, how to decorate your tree. All of that is in here because the man wants to show how fun it's going to be to keep Christmas. So here we have The Voice. The bright child's awoken. It's not awaken, awoken, okay? The bright child's awoken. With blessing for you, his promise is spoken that love is your due. And here for a token, a symbol that's true, the darkness is broken, the light comes anew. Because you had darkness coming, and that's at the very end. And throughout this, you're talking to each other. There's probably about 8 characters in that play. So what we call all this is idolatry. And the sermon then, the rest of the sermon is on idolatry for Israel. And I'll just mention, since we heard about the 7 churches of Revelation, that even in the 7 churches of Revelation, 2 of them, Pergamos and Thyatira, were guilty of idolatry. So idolatry does not escape us. I don't think any of you are going to go out and cut a tree down and do what we're going to read next. Because I want to you to take a look at Isaiah and Psalm 115. We'll read Psalm 115 and Isaiah 40. And the description, which is quite comical, at least Isaiah 44 is. So let's just turn to Psalm 115, and I'm going here, Psalm 115, and verses 1 through 8. Casey is crying because she thought she'd get a Christmas tree this year, and she just found out that she's not. I don't think so. At least she stopped crying. Okay. To God alone be the glory, Psalm 115. Not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but to your name give glory. And of course, we have that song in the hymnal. Because of your mercy, because of your truth, why should the Gentiles say, where is their God? Now, that's a good question because we're talking about idolatry. The Jews did not believe in images. There is a commandment, you shall not make to yourself any graven images. Wood, stone, silver, gold. You shall not do that. Anything in the heavens above or the earth beneath or the waters under the sea. That is the second commandment. That, by the way, the Catholics got rid of. Now, some say it's all included in the first commandment, but the Lutherans got rid of it also. Because when I learned the Ten Commandments, the first commandment was, and this was in communion class when I was 12 years old, first commandment is, you shall have no other gods except for the true God. The second one is, you shall not take the name of the Lord your God in vain. The second one was missing. And then, of course, what do you do to make 10 commandments? Well, you divide the 10th one into 2. And that's the way that I learned them. So the question is, where is their God? Because the Gentiles are looking around for the images, and there are no images to see. Going on, but our God is in heaven. He does whatever he pleases. Their idols are silver and gold, the Gentiles. Our God is in heaven. The work of men's hands for the Gentiles. They have mouths, but they do not speak. Eyes they have, but they do not see. They have ears, but they do not hear. Noses they have, but they do not smell. Hands can't handle. They have feet, but they can't walk. Nor do they mutter through their throat. Those who make them are like them. Now, if you stop and think, well, wait a minute. Now, what does that mean? Well, those who make them are like them. And that is what God's point is, I think, is that They can't see spiritually. They can't hear spiritually. They don't understand. They're just like a solid stone or wood idol. They who make them are just like them, no understanding whatsoever. Let's go to Isaiah 44. I think this is one of the funniest accounts, in one sense, that you can find in the Bible. Isaiah 44, verses 9 through 19. Isaiah 44, 9 through 19. And here it tells us, as Isaiah is talking about Israel, who is guilty of idolatry at this time. And by the way, the book that has more words concerning idolatry, and by the way, idolatry or idols, excuse me, is mentioned 95 times in the Bible. Idolatry is mentioned 5 times. But the book that has the most about idolatry is Ezekiel. During the time of Ezekiel, the house of Judah was just full of idols, and they were worse than the house of Israel. So Isaiah chapter 44, and let's start out in verse 9. Those who make an image, all of them are useless, and their precious things shall not profit. They are their own witnesses. They neither see nor know, that they may be ashamed. Who would form a god or mold an image that profits him nothing? Why would you make an image that has no profitability at all? Surely all his companions would be ashamed. And of course, Catholic Church does have images, and they do bow down to those images. The main difference between the Lutheran Church and the Catholic Church, when I was 17 years old and visited the Catholic Church, trying to just go see, and I've mentioned this before, trying to see what different churches are teaching, Methodists and Seventh-day Adventists. But anyway, I went home and I told my mom, there's no difference between the Lutheran and Catholic Church that didn't bring many stars on my paper. No difference at all, except they, is it genuflex, whatever, they kneel down more. That's the only thing I said. Everything else was the same. By that time, Latin was no longer part of their service. They actually talked in English. So the workmen, they are mere men. Let them all be gathered together. Let them stand by. Yet they shall fear, they shall be ashamed, because their God is not real. The blacksmith with the tongs works one in the coals, an image, fashions it with hammers and works it with the strength of his arms. Even so, he is hungry, his strength fails, he drinks no water, and he's faint. In other words, the image does no good for him. The craftsman stretches out his rule, marks one out with a chalk. Now, when you stop to think of carpentry, nothing changes, does it? Stretches out his rule, marks it with a chalk. And that's what happened during the time of Isaiah. They were doing the same thing. When I build something, if I have a piece of wood, I take a ruler and I mark it with a pencil or chalk. I measure twice. No, I don't. I measure once, I cut twice, three times, four times. What I've done. But anyway, he fashions it with a plane. He marks it out with a compass and makes it like the figure of a man, according to the beauty of a man, that it may remain in the house. He cuts down cedars. He takes the cypress, the oak, secures it for himself among the trees of the forest. And one of the notes that I found, because I looked up every scripture on idolatry and idols, but it talked about they worship under the evergreen tree. It was one of them. He plants a pine and the rain nourishes it. He plants a pine and the rain nourishes it. Then it shall be for a man to burn, for he will take some of it and warm himself. He kindles it and bakes bread, makes a god and worships it, makes it a carved image and falls down to it, burns half in the fire, and with this half he eats meat, he roasts a roast, and he's satisfied. He warms himself and says, oh, I'm warm, I've seen the fire. And the rest of it he makes into a god, his carved image. He falls down before it, worships it, prays to it, and says, deliver me, for you are my God. They do not know nor understand. Okay, brethren, one of the points that I want us to all get is when we have friends, relatives keeping Christmas, they really don't understand what they're doing. Is it a sin? Well, it's an unknown sin that the world is doing. Now, in Romans 1, you find that they knew better. Romans 1 talks about people knowing better and the wrath of God coming on them. But overall, the world is completely and totally deceived. My neighbors do not think that they're being hostile. They don't know they're hostile against God's law because they really think that they are, on Christmas, doing the right thing. So we don't treat them as condemned. We don't condemn anybody. But all of us need to realize when they are keeping Christmas, we'll see some scriptures just here in a few moments. We'll see some scriptures where they believe that they are worshiping God. They really do. It's just, as we'll see, doing no good because they don't know how to worship God. So we go on finally to, let's go to verse 19, which is really funny when you look at it. No one considers in his heart, nor is there knowledge nor understanding to say, you know, I've burned half of it in fire, and I've also baked bread on it. I've roasted meat, and I've eaten it. And shall I make the rest of it an abomination? Shall I fall down before a block of wood? It's like Isaiah is saying, they're not even thinking this way. They're not even thinking, hey, I took wood and I'm using it for a fireplace. I'm getting warm from it. I'm getting roasted meat from it. And the rest I'm worshiping. I'm worshiping a block of wood. So God has a sense of humor. Shall I fall down before a block of wood that I can burn and roast some more meat? And maybe they did when wood was short. I don't know. So we see then that there's that idolatry and people do not understand. Let's go to Matthew 15, verses 8 through 9. Matthew 15, verses 8 through 9. This is one that we know well, and we should try to keep this one to memory. I know that sometimes if we haven't gone over a scripture in a long time, we're going to forget it. But in Matthew 15, verse 8, these people draw near to me with their mouth. And there are quite a few prophecies where it tells us that people are drawing near in the Old Testament. They really, really think, and this would be the Israelites, as time has gone by, because there was a period of time when, well, if you read about Israel in Acts 7, they burnt offerings, they sacrificed for 40 years in the wilderness, it says, to their god Moloch, to their god Moloch, while Moses was there. What was he going to do with those people? So verse 8 goes on, they draw near to me with their mouth, in their own mind. My neighbors are drawing near to God, and we do have some very religious neighbors. They go to church every week. We have some other neighbors that don't go to church at all who are religious, and they never go to church, but they're probably just as religious as those who do go to church. And honor me with their lips. In other words, this is what they really are doing. They are honoring in their own mind. They're honoring God with their lips. But their heart is far from me. And God said in the very beginning at Mount Horeb that that's the way it was going to be, because even when they said, well, we will obey your commands, God said, you don't have a heart to do so. But in their mind, they're totally deceived. So for us to condemn them, this is why God is not judging the world today. Judgment is on you and me. Judgment is on you and me. And that's why we have to think in terms of idolatry. I don't think any of you are going home tonight and cutting logs and again making an image. You're not doing that. And you're not worshiping any image. You just aren't. Even if you're around relatives who are keeping Christmas, who don't know any better, you're not there to worship any image if you visit them. These people draw near to me with their mouth, but their heart is far from me. And in vain, then, in vain, do they worship me. Are they worshiping God? Well, they'll come up in the resurrection, second resurrection, and they'll say, we worshiped you. Especially those who are nominal Christians who said, well, Christ is my Savior. They will say that. They will think that. And then their eyes will be opened. And then if you're the neighbor, they're going to say, well, why didn't you tell me more? I could have been with you in that first resurrection. Why am I waiting for the second? No, they'll be very happy, I'm sure, very glad that they know the truth. In vain do they worship me. Why? Teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. And so God said, and I'll just quote it in Deuteronomy 12, verse 32. God said in Deuteronomy 12, and this is the book, in the 39th to 40th year when Israel was in the wilderness, he said, look, you're going into the promised land. Now, when you get there, you're going to find the land pretty clear. Well, you'll be clearing it out, but you're going to see images that you will break down. In fact, I still remember the story where Mr. Armstrong was at Terrace Villa, in the back of Terrace Villa, where there were some statues that is, that were pagan images, and he took a hammer and he just broke the thing in pieces. And I can't remember if it was Terrace Villa or not. I thought it was. But anyway, he did that, and I still remember that was a big thing to me to hear that when I was a freshman in college and been keeping Christmas. And I had an image of Jesus Christ on my desk for all my life before I went to college. It was this picture of Jesus Christ right on my desk. And so I knew what Christ looked like, and I found out a lot when I went to college. Mr. Ness straightened me out really good. No, we had a really good relationship. Why am I pausing? We did. So Deuteronomy 12:32, let's go back there. God said, when you come into the land, I don't want you to worship me as the pagans worship their gods. Do not do that. Then he said in verse 32, I don't want you to add anything. Don't add anything. Don't add a Christmas tree. Don't add, chicken eggs. Don't add anything to what I am telling you to do. Don't add any of that, because it is wrong. I don't want you to do that. And don't diminish. Don't take away from what I've told you to do in the holy days. Don't take away. I'm telling you, there's unleavened bread you're going to be eating. You're going to have wine for your Passover. And you can't diminish from that. Everything that I'm telling you to do, you can't do that. You can't change anything. And remember what Jeroboam did, he changed fully, and we talked about that before. But let's go on then. Why would people in the church go back to keeping Christmas? In 1993, 4, 5, that's what happened. People who were in the church, not having kept Christmas for 10, 20, 30, maybe 40 years, because that would be the 90s, and they would have come into the church in 1955. Maybe not too many of them, but definitely people who had been in the church for 40 years, since we're 30 years, since the 60s, definitely went back. Why would they do that? And the answer is found in 1 Timothy 4 and verse 1. 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 1. And we were surprised, and even more surprised, that if we saw them in a store in 19, Well, 2,000, and they saw us dressed up, and they asked us, well, what are you dressed up for? And we said, well, we're keeping the Feast of Trumpets, and they had already forgotten 5 years later. And that did happen. 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 1. Now the Spirit expressly says, in the latter time, some will depart from the faith, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons. Now, I didn't have the time really to go into 1 Corinthians 10, but when it talked about fleeing idolatry in 1 Corinthians 10, it was talking about going to a location where the Gentiles were sacrificing animals to their gods, and you are not supposed to partake of that because they are worshiping devils. They are worshiping devils. I think that's 1 Corinthians 10, verse 15. Now, just as an aside there, it's like, well, see, you can't be there with them while they do that and partake in their ceremony. But if they sell that same food in the shambles, in the market, don't ask any questions whether it was sacrificed to an idol or not, because the idol is nothing and the sacrifice is nothing. Of course, it would have to be clean meat. That wasn't the point in all of that. It would have to be clean. If it's in the shambles, don't ask whether it was offered or not. You can buy it because you're not there in a ceremony with the Gentiles. You're not partaking of a sacrifice there, okay? I don't think we have that here in this society, but some people have that question. Well, how could you buy it in the shambles? But in 1 Corinthians 10, you couldn't eat it then. Well, because you were partaking of a sacrificial ceremony with them at that time, and you would not do that at all. But anyway, it goes on to say here, giving heed to deceiving spirits and doctrines of demons. People are being deceived. If you go to 2 Corinthians, it said, I fear lest as Satan beguiled Eve, you also would be or have your mind corrupted. And remember, Satan the devil is very powerful. And brethren, what we have to see is for those who've never been called to the church at this time, again, their sin, it's to him that knows to do good and does it not, to him it is sin. If they are told, God is, it is sin, but it is not something of character. If you know to do good and do it not, that has to do with your character. If you are totally oblivious, you don't have any knowledge, and you are involved in Satan's world, God is not even judging that. And now you'll find out, we would find out later, that that was a transgression of God's law, and it would have to be repented of. You wouldn't do it in the second resurrection. You would change. But it would not be a matter of character. People are not, you know, doing something wrong in their own mind. So there's a difference. God is not judging the world today. Is it a sin? It is a sin. They just don't know it. They have no idea what they're doing. They think that they are worshiping God. They do. Okay, so what about us today? What is idolatry, and what must we think of when it comes to idolatry? Well, just in general, we know idolatry is a fruit of the flesh. When we go to Galatians 5, we can see a list of all of those things that are fruits of the flesh. And idolatry is one of them. Well, how is that? Do you think the Galatians were actually keeping Christmas? I don't think so. They were going back to some things that they shouldn't have. But there's no indication that they were idolatrous like the Gentile world was. They were going back to something that they shouldn't have. So there was something else that they were guilty of, something that we could be guilty of when it comes to idolatry. Let me go to Romans 2, verse 22. And then we have two more scriptures to wrap up. Romans 2 and verse 22. Romans 2, verse 22. You who say, do not commit adultery, do you commit adultery? You who abhor idols, and that would be the images of the time, idols of wood, idols of stone. You who abhor idols, do you rob temples? Evidently, they did. They would go into a temple and steal because they would think probably, well, it's an idol. I can steal what I want. Maybe they go in and there's treasure there, but that would have been stealing. You wouldn't even go into a pagan temple and steal the goods. So we can say, well, you know, I abhor idols, but now we have to ask ourselves, do I do something else that is idolatry? And I think we may be partially surprised, not totally surprised. Let's go to 1 Samuel 15 and verse 23. 1 Samuel chapter 15 and verse 23. So we all abhor idols, don't we? We're in that category. I do. I don't like any idols. We don't even like pictures of Jesus Christ. That's something we like. When I was young in the ministry and visiting, I think I was probably 5 years, I was in a home, and on the way out, there was a picture of Jesus Christ. I knew it was, but what I did was I said, "Who's that?" And they went, "Who's that? That's Jesus Christ." And I said, "Oh, well, you know, we're not supposed to have images." I don't do that anymore. If I see a picture of Jesus Christ and they're that new, I just kind of pass by and learn my lesson not to be so frank. My wife told me, or was it my mother told me, my name should have been Frank. But that was years ago. Now my name is gentle, kind, and gracious. I wish. I hope. Hope I'm getting that way. 1 Samuel 15 and verse 23. So it says, rebellion is a sin of witchcraft. Stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Stubbornness is as iniquity and idolatry. Now, we don't think of in this age, normally, in fact, that's not even in my mind. I was doing a study of idolatry, and that's one of the five places. Why would stubbornness be idolatry? Well, because we are stubborn. We're going to do it our way, no matter what. And they're talking about a stubborn person who is just always wanting to never listen, always do it their way. And if it's their way, that's the right way. They're a god unto themselves, is what it is. And I'm saying they because I hope none of us are. Well, we can be stubborn at times, but I hope none of us are just stubborn all the time. We have to think, you know, I'm supposed to listen. I'm supposed to be trying to gain wisdom. Maybe I should listen a little bit more because I may be wrong. And that attitude should prevail. Now, are we talking about maybe I'm wrong and not keeping Christmas? And the answer is, no, yeah, we would be wrong in keeping Christmas. It's what we would be. So we take a look at this then and we ask ourselves, am I being stubborn? Because that's iniquity and idolatry. Iniquity and idolatry is what it is. Okay, so last scripture, and that is in Colossians 3 and verse 5. Colossians 3 and verse 5. And I think all of us are familiar with this. This is putting on the old man, putting on the new man, taking off the old man. Verse 5, therefore, put to death your members which are on the earth. That's fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Now, you have two words here that we'll end with. How often does God talk about idolatry in the Bible in the New Testament? How often with the Ten Commandments? Well, with this, we have the Tenth Commandment, and if we covet, that's idolatry, and we won't be in the kingdom. Coveting is wanting what someone else has. It's not wanting, it's wanting what they have, taking it from them. Coveting Coveting is a word, and I think that was used, I think Mr. Johnson talked about that in one of the last classes on 1 Thessalonians. But coveting can be good, because lusting is always bad. You can covet something that's good. 1 Corinthians 14:1 talks about covet the best gift. So you can covet something, but coveting then is wanting what someone else has, like your neighbor's wife, like your neighbor's husband, like your neighbor's car. I mean, you want that. You can buy something, you can desire to have a nice car, and it's not coveting at all. But when you want something and you don't even deserve it, you don't have the money to get it, and we could, I won't go that way because that would be might stretching a little bit, but we can go to what God says, and that is with the commandments, 10th commandment is idolatry, breaking the 10th commandment. First commandment is idolatry. Having other gods before the true God, that's flat out idolatry. Second commandment, an image, is idolatry. The sixth commandment, you shall not kill, would be covetousness first, because you read in James 4, you covet, you ask, and you ask amiss that you may, just because of your lusts, you may use it for your own lusts. The sixth commandment, killing, comes from covetousness normally. I suppose there could be just anger situations too. Seventh commandment, you shall not commit adultery. Definitely covetousness and idolatry. Idolatry is adulterous. Well, let's put it this way. Adulterous is an idolater. And then finally, you have thou shalt not steal. Is that coveting, which is also idolatry? So you have at least six of the commandments that involved in idolatry and covetousness. So we want to take a look at that part of idolatry. We hopefully would not come up in the resurrection and are told, look, you are covetous, you are an idolater, and you would say, no, I've never dropped in front of a Christmas tree and worshipped. I've never dropped in front of a pagan image and worshipped. And God would say, but you're stubborn. You were stubborn all your life. And also, you were very covetous all your life. You practiced that, and you can't do that. I think that's why we feed the flock, and at the same time, we're feeding ourselves, so that we're not guilty of idolatry. So I hope all of us recognize idolatry in the world that is not being judged, and that we recognize idolatry in ourselves.